This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door. Here we are, Survivor Series from San Diego, Petco Park. It's John Pollock and waiting with you after four matches that we are about to break down. How are you, Wei? We're going to be out of here in 20 minutes.
Boy, is it a stark contrast to how we maybe usually talk about AEW shows. There really is no middle ground, is there? You're either talking about a 15, 16 match card or a four match card spread over.
Okay, well, this card started at 7 p.m. Eastern time. What time did you start watching?
Like 7:45.
That's probably the smart play to do. Because I caught up so quickly. I felt like this was the longest thing in the world, okay? Because the time in between matches was just insane tonight. It was just insane.
Were they running ads?
Yes.
For the previous shows, like, were they doing that for Russell Pulisa?
I don't recall like the specific ad breaks where we get like the music on Netflix with the just superstar shots, which I don't know if that's like ESPN inventory that is just we're getting boxed out of. Right. I mean, that does make sense that there's more ad inventory, but I don't recall that on the last two shows that have been ESPN ones where it was directly going to the commercial break music we get on SmackDown or Raw.
Yeah, and by the way, we are, of course, from Canada, for people who might not be aware, so we're watching the Netflix feed and not necessarily the ESPN feed. So I am kind of curious to hear, for people who watch on ESPN, what you guys might have seen that we may not have.
Well,
I could tell it was certainly a longer experience if you were watching in real time.
Well, tonight was, by leaps and bounds, the most successful Survivor Series in history. The final number that WrestleTix reported was 45,034, which means in the last 7 days, that number increased by 10,000 over the last week. The number they announced on the broadcast was 46,016. We had a $5 million budget that the San Diego Tourism Board had earmarked for this show that WrestleNomics had reported on back in July. So this was, you know, a real big successful move to a stadium level edition of Survivor Series, running at a baseball park that does come with some logistical challenges. They basically had to convert the dugout into the entrance area. So they forwent the Shark Tanks for a year for the War Game setup. What did you think just about the overall aesthetics of the show from just a presentation standpoint?
I thought it was a terrific looking show. Outdoor stadium events, I feel like, are a bit of a rarity, and certainly like a double caged event in an outdoor stadium. I thought it was tremendously well captured, and I didn't certainly like if the only sacrifice is like the lack of a shark cage, I don't really mind. I thought it looked spectacular.
Well, the one caveat that comes with these baseball stadiums is that this is a long runway for these folks to have to make to the ring, and this is not the longest entrance that they have had, but man, I was timing some of these entrances, and dude, there were some long walks to the ring, especially the ones like Drew McIntyre, who was in no race to get to that ring. And just, could you imagine if Randy Orton was booked on this show? We'd still be watching it.
Now, they did specify like the 3 minutes don't begin until the person approaches the ring.
No, so it just increased the time. It's not like we're even ticking down, because some of these, the clock would have started by the time they got into the ring. That's how long of a walk some of them had to make. And you had like this sharp, almost 90 degree turn you had to make.
Well, we know how much Paul Levesque loves his entrances. You're not going to cut that off, okay, for the sake of what? Trying to, you know, fit, I don't know, like an interval time to be consistent? No, no way.
Well, there was not going to be any sacrificing of the entrances. They had a like an 18-hour pre-show that included interviews with Becky Lynch, Dominic Mysterio, Roman Reigns. Rey Mysterio was on the panel. I was stunned this guy didn't get involved in the Cena match. I think everyone was waiting for Rey to come out, but there was no Rey. And I guess storyline-wise, they kind of couldn't have Rey there unless they were just going to have him look helpless. And then the Star Spangled Banner, sung by San Diego's own and patron of Way's playlist, Cassie B. You big Cassie B fan?
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, huge.
Huge. Yeah, massive. Mm-hmm.
Our announcers for the night, it is Michael Cole and Wade Barrett. And to start off the show, I was just taking in everything, Way. They had these like multicolored fumes of smoke that just shot into the air in concert with one. It was kind of pyro, but this was like just gusts of smoke that all just like coagulated in the air. And all I looked at is here was like, here you go, San Diego. Here is like stuff that's going to be just going into your air breathing. It just looked like this cloud that they created.
I mean,
let's dissect this.
Seen like the Olympics or like, you know, like any other major sporting event where this is sort of the norm?
No, they have no care for our future.
The city was injecting a lot of money into this event. Okay, they weren't going to do it without appropriate pyro and colored smoke.
Well, we are starting off with the women's War Games match, one of our four contests that we're going to be scheduled. So for this version, we have a 5-minute period to start and then 3 minutes for every other entrant. The only way to win is by pin or submission, or someone could just voluntarily leave the cage. But as we would learn, not until the match beyond begins, because Brock and Roman took a nice tour of Petco Park before making it into the ring. So no shark cages means we're going to have to put those that toy line on pause this Christmas season. We'll come back strong next year, I'm sure, with some shark cages. Overall, we talked about this briefly on Friday. I do not need to separate Survivor Series into two nights, okay? I'm going to be very firm on that one. I did not need this show broken up into two nights. I don't need an undercard, and I didn't need to... I don't need 24 hours between these War Games matches.
We don't need this much period. We don't need, like, we don't need wrestling, period, I guess, if you're going to say that.
How would you I run this company? No more Survivor Series.
No more shows.
Done. Turkey I'll shake. Anyone. I'm sorry. Okay.
We're staying
we
in
have,
bed.
We have morals. No more Saudi Arabia. We'd run this company into the ground immediately. Yeah.
It's not a question of need, John. It's a question of how much money can they possibly make. And of course, if the
I'd run World Woke Entertainment, and it would be, that would be how I'd run this.
To maximize the profitability of this brand, John, okay? Four match cards over a weekend is something I can entirely see them do, like maybe as early as next year.
The whole part of the show, man.
That's right.
So starting things off, Charlotte Flair is out first. She's wearing this gear that they explained was inspired by a 7-year-old who is battling a brain tumor and was actually there in the crowd. So that was the impetus for her her custom gear that she had. And she's starting off with Asuka, who she just beat for the advantage. So for this one, it's kind of weird. Like the baby faces had the advantage, but you always have to kind of work this match. Like the baby faces can't really have a numbers advantage. So they had to come up with like creative ways to just let the heels be in control.
And I don't exactly know how creative they necessarily like were nor even like needed. I mean, really it just required the heels to get the advantage in the match. Like,
well, you're forgetting this was an old horseman trick. Charlotte Flair was able to make herself disappear at points of this match and the production did not shoot her. So you just thought Charlotte just poof vanished into thin air at some points.
You
thought you were watching like a 2-on-1 beatdown when Charlotte would say, "We just won't show you." And then it's not like it's even numbers.
It does just kind of tell you that like the coin toss match really doesn't matter a whole lot. You know, whoever gets the advantage when the time comes for that match itself, they will come up with whatever way to give the heels the advantage.
Or just let the heels get the advantage in both matches. Is one person going to complain about that?
You mean like have the heels win the advantage matches?
Yes.
Well, like what's the difference?
The difference is you can then just tell the story of the baby faces fighting from underneath instead of having to come up with ways
But you could do that anyway. But why you could do that in the body of the match anyway, regardless of the outcome of the advantage.
Well, it looks kind of silly when you're up like 3-on-2 and the heels are having their way with you. And then we have to come up with ways to make Charlotte disappear.
I guess what's sillier, you know, having that or having a match that has an expected outcome every single year that they choose to do an advantage match.
Way it would take years before people would catch on to that. And you get a better match at the end of it.
I don't think it would take years.
Charlotte and Asuka start, and It's just, they're just trading kicks. They must have really enjoyed this because they let this one go 5 minutes and 40 seconds. They gave them 40 extra seconds before Io Sky was, the countdown came up for her. So she comes out with her trash can lid with her name on it. We had like names on some of these weapons. And it starts as a just one-on-one match with Io and Asuka. Michael Cole refers to Io Sky as pound for pound the best wrestler in the world, period. That's who's getting his award.
He's been consistent with that, and I think that's a great way to like promote your talent.
Well, that's fun. That
he's been a fan since their Triple Tails days. We know this.
He knows. He voted for her in the Hall of Fame. There's a Sky goes for this this double springboard from one ring to the other and does a slip, but manages to complete the move onto Asuka. And this is the spot where Charlotte in this 3 minute period was gone for 95% of it. It was pretty much a singles match with Io against Asuka. Becky Lynch comes out fourth and she brings a kendo stick. Now, thankfully, unlike the past War Games, it wasn't like every single person had to bring their weapon of choice to the ring. They were just selective weapons. Although, man, weapons were kind of, I feel like they were the least utilized this year. Like, they didn't go crazy on any big weapon spots in either of the matches.
I personally don't really mind that. I don't think everybody needs to come in with a gimmick, you know?
Well, they had some. They had the kendo sticks from Becky. Charlotte takes it away. They have a brief face-off where Becky puts her pinky up and Flair flashes her the four before they fought. Alexa Bliss is fifth, and she runs down, they explain, because she wants to help her partner, Charlotte Flair. I think she was just given orders that, like, let's roll to the ring as quickly as possible. Kairi Sane is out sixth, and it's Kairi's chain that she comes out with. And she wraps it around her fist. She got a lot of utilization out of this chain. And in the goofiest spot of this match, the heels wrapped up the baby faces like this was like an old like cartoon, and then proceeded to hit them with double-seated drop kicks as Becky held the chain with the three all impervious to escape this trap. You have nothing to for this. Number seven, AJ Lee comes out. Very loud reaction for her. Becky blocks her from entering the door. So AJ climbs over the top and leaps in. Kairi is mocking her by skipping. And then Becky attacks from behind. It's 3-on-1 until Flair and Bliss come back from the dead. And we have them backing up AJ. Nia is out eighth. And then number nine is Rhea Ripley. And she comes out. And Michael Cole, our film buff, has a special costume tonight inspired by the film Terrifier and Art the Clown. And given all the dead time on some of this show, I did all of my research here. She is a big fan of this film. In fact, after the first three installments of Terrifier, it looks like she might end up having a role in the fourth film. This has been her big hope to get into this film. And director Damien Leone has teased online that Rhea might, in fact, get into this fourth film. Terrifier. All right. Yes. As Art the Clown.
I've never seen it. Okay.
Neither is most people here until I get my emails tomorrow. She applied a prism lock onto Kairi with the trash can lid or the trash can itself placed over her head. And there's a running seated drop kick by Sky. Crowd enjoyed that. 10th was Lash Legend. I don't know how many SmackDown viewers were among these 45,000. I'm going to guess not many of them quite understanding who Lash Legend was. She came out and it was first of all, this is maybe the first time we've heard her theme on the main roster. And came out, they did like have everyone sell for her. Like, she comes in and everyone is going down. Legend and Nia kind of worked as like your monster team together, each going for a cover at one point. And AJ breaks up one of the covers and Lash has still got the other one pinned here, but Jessica Carr just stopped counting. So we almost got a phantom finish here. The insane elbow is hit, the Kabuki special with Kairi using the chain onto Sky. This is where we're into the match beyond. And then Ripley is surrounded 5-on-1. Where are the other baby faces? They're all recovering. And she's willing to fight them all. And then not exactly the most dramatic of saves. This was not timed as well, but the idea here was that Asuka was going to miss Rhea, and Charlotte dives to save her former foe, and Asuka misses for the second night in a row with the mist, and this results in Rhea and Charlotte now bonding together because of this save.
And it cuts off Lash Legend's run. So, you know, it wasn't that the baby faces like,
yeah, because it's Lash that takes the mist. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't the like the baby faces stopped her. It was you know, friendly fire accident. And like on Friday, I thought this mist spot was also really poorly timed.
I thought, and this is very rare on a WWE show, I thought the cameras, like, they missed a lot of stuff. And part of it, like, yeah, you are doing two rings and 10 people, but there were a lot of spots on both matches that I, like, there was, like, stuff that the announcers had to continue. There was a spot in the men's main event where you can see in the background Drew low blows Cody, and you're missing it. And then Cole and Wade are explaining it. And, like, a full 45 seconds later, we cut over, and Drew still got his arm underneath, like, between Cody's legs. I'm like, has his arm been there for 45 seconds? Because I saw when he first low-blowed him. Has he just continued to try and eliminate this man's testicles?
We're jumping the gun, but in covering that, they ended up missing, or at least not focusing on Breaker's spear to Roman, which laid Roman out for the rest of the match. So it was sort of like a whole, a little bit of a, you know, disastrous coverage there.
So with Lash taken out from the mist, Flair and Rhea, they join together with a dual suck it, and then they suplex Jax. She takes a twisted bliss. Sky goes on top, and AJ takes the trash can, but she's too short to reach Io to hand her the trash can. So Rhea hoists up AJ on her shoulders to pass the trash can to Io, who proceeds to place it over top of her and hit a swanton onto everybody. Becky is the last one standing of the heels. She tries to run and escape, which would have ended the match, but instead they pull her down, riptide, and then AJ applies a Black Widow, forcing Becky to submit in 40 minutes and 50 seconds.
Yeah. So, like almost every War Games I've seen, like, a very entertaining match. Like, the atmosphere is tremendous. The crowds are usually outstanding. I would say for this particular match, I don't think any of the segments preceding the match beyond felt too long. I mean, at 3 minutes each, it can't really feel long. I liked using Charlotte as the first on the babyface side because it allowed them to draw on their sort of historical rivalries within the division between Asuka and Becky and Charlotte, of course. I thought it flowed well to have Charlotte be the first one to be at a disadvantage because it led to Alexa saving her. And from that point on, I thought like the match flowed well in terms of the way it was structured. I thought they provided a nice showcase for Lash Legend in her debut, giving her like a pretty typical like big man run. Put her on the map, I would say, in a way that, like, you know, let the audience understand what power level we should be looking at her with. They focused on Lash Legend versus Rhea Ripley as, like, you know, this is the standard you should be expecting or where Lash Legend is. It's very inconsistent, in my opinion, from, like, how she was portrayed in NXT. But they're giving her, like, a really fresh and very serious run here on the main roster, and that's good to see. I felt AJ's role was pretty limited. I don't know about you, John, but, like,
no, everybody. It was like she was getting the finish, and like really her big spot was just entering the ring by climbing over top. It's almost like that was something just thrown at her to give her something before the finish. Like all you would remember is the way she entered, handing the trash can to Io and the Black Widow spot. Like that was really all. And that's like she feels like the big baby face coming out of this, but was not the focus of the match at all. But she did get the glory spot and obviously something with Becky for the future.
So for me, I still feel like AJ is probably very untested as far as like, you know, how well she stacks up to the modern standard. We saw her in the mixed tag and she looked like good enough there. In this match, she felt like pretty downplayed and I imagine maybe even protected, you could say, just given like, I think like the standard of a Rhea Ripley or even like, you know, Io Sky certainly and Asuka. So we've yet to really see where AJ Lee is truly at. And we have to talk about it, but like I thought a lot of the stuff in this match was mistimed. You know, like unfortunately, the pivotal moment in the match, which is to me the Asuka spot and the Asuka misting spot. But it closed well in terms of action, you know, going from the heels with the 5-on-1 to the baby faces with the 5-on-1, of course, highlighted by that impressive trash can spot from EO. I thought it was not a flawlessly executed War Games, but I thought the beats were well designed, and I thought the match overall was entertaining and helped elevate certain people like a Lash Legend. Becky versus AJ continues to, you know, build pretty well. So I was overall high on the match, but not necessarily the execution of a lot of it.
Yeah, I thought it was like it was a really average War Games to me. I think that probably the spot that will stand out is like the EO spot, probably. My issue with Lash Legend is I feel they should have done a lot more of this on television in the lead up to this rather than this kind of being her like showcase. Like she's been confined to all of these backstage segments, and I think the result was a crowd that either didn't know who she was or just hasn't taken to her yet because they haven't really been introduced that this is this monster. That the match in many ways was like her entrance. She was designed to get over in this match as well. And you know, I think it's fair to compare like the fact that they're in such close proximity. Even if you want to throw out the comparisons to Blood and Guts, like War Games is like a really violent match. And this one to me was just like, this seemed to be like one of the most conservative that they have done. Like it just sort of felt like it was, you know, it was more built around just the countdown clock and then doing EO's big spot at the end more so than like this violent fight that it never really achieved that kind of feel to it.
I wonder how much of that went into just like how much they were thinking about Blood and Guts. I'm sure they were thinking a lot about Blood and Guts heading into this, because if there was any attempt at even trying to turn this into like a bloody affair, I think it would just invite comparisons that they could never match up to. You know, there's no way they could match.
I think this invites comparisons that this end result is like, I just think like this is such a far cry from what we saw 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I guess you can't help it. But if they attempted anything like resembling a level of blood, like it just wouldn't be possible. I say that, but then like we had like that Drew McIntyre match, which was really crazy. But I wasn't going to expect it here.
Yeah. It was an average match to me. I don't think it's one that is going to stand out all that much. But yeah, it is a big question about like AJ, like in a big singles match after this. Like we've only seen the two matches at this point, but she does feel like one thing is clear. They have a lot of big babyface stars. And they were all showcased in this match, like from AJ to Rhea, with Charlotte and Alexa, and of course EO as well. Like you've got a lot of great babyface talent there. Yep. And you know, we might have had some complaints about War Games, and I know that sometimes you have complaints if you feel that you're trapped inside of your geographic location. And here at Post Wrestling, we don't want you to have to go to war or have to play games when it comes to discovering the top VPN provider on the entire planet.
Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. You know, it's gotten really expensive to be a wrestling fan, so it's no surprise that VPNs have basically become an essential tool if you're watching wrestling week in and week out. I'm lucky. I live in a territory where I get full access to WWE programming and premium live events on one streaming service for one fee. But let's say I travel to the US for a month. You really think I'm going to juggle a bunch of different services just to keep up with Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and PLEs? Instead, I just boot up my NordVPN, set my location back to Canada, turn on my streaming service, and I'm good to go. I even have the NordVPN app installed right on my Apple TV. A couple clicks with my remote, no wires, no technical knowledge, done. So go to nordvpn.com/postwrestling, sign up for a 2-year plan, and you get 4 extra months for free with the 30-day money-back guarantee. nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Stay safe, save money, and take control of your internet with Nord.
Just very well done.
Wow.
You're not going to the US for a month anytime soon, are you?
No. But if I am, I will surely know how to get my content. Yes.
That's it. Folks, this is how Stephanie McMahon gets through these shows. Okay. So you can also join NordVPN.com/postwrestling. I'm not going to be apologetic because this is where WWE took their commercial breaks as well during the show. We got these long intervals until we got to the next match, which was John Cena, Dominic Mysterio for the Intercontinental Championship. And Dominic comes out just with all the swagger in the world, and he's joined by Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez, and there was a long wait until they finally played Cena's music, and out he comes. He just goes up and down by the entrance. He's mobbed by all of these fans and then looks into the camera. Last PLE, last time on ESPN. It's like, wait, what are your top 10 John Cena on the ESPN app moments? It's been a hell of a run since September.
I guess it would be this, the AJ match. And what did he do at Crown Jewel?
Murdered by Brock Lesnar.
Okay.
He faced AJ at Crown Jewel, and then Brock was WrestlePalooza. So.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. Okay. Last time on ESPN. This is a sentimental moment for John.
So they kept calling this like John Cena's last PLE. So I guess Saturday night's main event is not a PLE?
Yeah, it's not premium.
Okay.
It's just an LE. It's an LE.
SLE.
Saturday live event. Yeah, okay. That's it. I would think the same thing. It was also noted that Stephanie McMahon is going to call Cena's retirement match. This was stated on the pre-show.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe with Joe Tessitore.
Has she ever done playback or commentary?
The only time I remember doing it was that first Women's Royal Rumble. And I don't know if she's ever done it since, unless it was just like, you know, sitting down for a match back in her like heel days.
I wonder what brought that on.
I don't know. It's, I don't know. Would have been Michael.
Who would have suggested that?
It should be Michael Cole calling this match, should it not?
I think Stephanie should do play-by-play.
Ah, oh, John! Just screams.
Yeah, should be and fun. Then just breaks into like a VPN ad.
Well, she can do an ad read. We do know that. So out comes John for his 177th PLE, as Michael Cole informs us. And early on, Perez trips up Cena as Dom distracts the referee, and then Dom goes after the eyes, and Raquel nails Cena from the apron, and Dominic proceeds to hit only three amigos, which is kind of like nothing now.
I mean, after seeing 14, yeah.
What's three? Cena then chases him on the floor and runs in to the Twin Towers of Roxanne Perez and Raquel Rodriguez, who... more to come with those two in this match. And Dom gets a sneak attack in, and then Dom comes off the barricade with a Rana and comes crashing down, and he's grabbing his shoulder. And Wade noting how eerily similar this is to Monday with Penta. And I am sure that John Cena is going to have a wonderful career in Hollywood, but his overacting here to the referee... Oh no, my match. It's, oh no. I was like, there wasn't an ounce of me that was buying any of this. And just go back and watch John Cena during this.
I would say, like, even if you weren't looking towards Cena as a tell, I think the production pretty much gave it away. I mean, we saw an example of like a realistic injury on Monday with the way that they covered the Penta injury, which was not covering it at all, not showing Penta while he was on the outside.
You hit the nail on the head Monday when you're like, okay, this is how you should do a worked injury. Yep. And like, 5 days later, they're like, okay, let's play off of this. And they did everything opposite that they did on Monday.
Let me just say, I thought the spot looked really great. Like, if you're telling me that, hey, we want Dom, you to like hit a run off the barricade and make it look like you hurt yourself. I thought it looked great. Like, I thought Dom did a tremendous job. And Cena, I'm sure, had some involvement in carrying him and dropping him as well. They did a great job of, like, giving us the initial spot. But it's just the coverage, I felt, was not as convincing. And then, of course...
I would have done a bunch of... Like, I like the idea of this, because it... But
loved it.
Let's continue here. So Cena is just aghast at, oh no, what are we going to do? It's my last PLE. So the referee is waving in the trainer, and then Raquel runs in and delivers a Tejana bomb to John Cena. I was like, okay. Then he is hunched over, and Roxanne Perez proceeds to hit the most amazing Pop Rocks in history. I'm sorry. This looked like the goofiest thing I have ever seen in my life, of like Roxanne Perez hitting a Pop Rocks, overpowering this monster of John Cena, who just is like three sizes of Roxanne Perez.
I mean, have you seen an amazing red match? They like, he's often, I don't think this is any more ridiculous than like any professional wrestling.
Well, move. Anyway, John Cena, just unconscious from this Pop Rocks, is laid down, and then Dom runs in, and the crowd sees that he has been faking this injury, and he proceeds to, they have set Cena onto the middle rope. He hits a 619 and then hits the frog splash. And I'm just saying, like, this is an awesome near fall, but they blew this because the referee will not count. Mm-hmm. He's not going to count. It was like, what are you doing? Like, that was the spot of the match, and this crowd was going to like lose its mind for this near fall, and they killed it by not doing the 2 3/4 kick out.
So
they redid this. Did you notice? They redid this pretty much entire sequence 2 minutes later.
Well, I think that's why they didn't want the kick out here, because they were saving it for later. But stupid. I agree. I think, like, I thought the injury angle, like Dom and Cena, worked it really well. Like the actual spot was worked really well. And as an Eddie spot, I thought this was one that didn't feel like it was just like doing a copy. I felt this was actually taking the spirit of the Eddie spot to like the next level with like this excellent ruse. I thought like Raquel and Roxanne, like doing what they did, like worked really well to build to this near fall. But there's no precedent set, at least in the WWE, for a ref not making the count, right? There really isn't. Like in New Japan, like red shoes, yes.
That's a red shoes power trip. But it's like, I don't care about what you would do in a real situation. We're trying to maximize the drama of this injury spot for this big kick out that you have got the crowd to believe that Dominic is going to beat John Cena. And I'm sorry, there was no drama moments later when they redid this compared to all the effort you put into the fake injury spot to do the kick out. So I thought they just blew this. And it could have been, I just thought this crowd was going to erupt for this near fall. Mm-hmm. So they don't. Cena makes his comeback, and then he applies the STF, and Dominic gets to the rope and he undoes his boot, and John just pulls the boot off, and Dominic proceeds to hit the lightest 619 you have ever seen in your life, and then hits a frog splash for a 2 count. So they pretty much redid this spot, 619 frog splash, and then he just puts the boot right back on. I didn't understand what the purpose of this was. Why did he take this boot off?
Well,
there was no weapon that he was hiding in there. He was at the rope.
He puts the boot off to catch Cena off guard so he can drop toe hold him into position for the 619. And then afterwards, Dom put the boot on to take himself, I guess.
Would this be enough that you're so mystified by a boot that you'd get dropped toe hold and you're stuck on this contemplating life?
Well, it worked here. So in storyline, that they felt that was logical. And then when Dom put the boot on, it was enough to distract him to allow Cena to put him into the AA.
They're in a punching exchange, and Wade notes that Andy Ruiz, who is ringside, must be impressed watching these punches. I'm sure there's a lot about John Cena that Andy Ruiz is impressed by. His punches are not going to be one of them. I can say that for a fact. Dominic ends up Cena misses Dominic taking out Chad Patton with the shoulder block of doom, because Cena's shoulder must be made of titanium, because Chad Patton was gone for a long time. JD and Balor come out, and they screw up. They miss the moonsault and the coup de grace, and then they both get taken out with a double AA from Cena. Dom grabs the belt. Cena ducks, hits the AA, and waves another referee in, which leads to Liv Morgan's return. And Dominic is smiling. She walks up to him and then wallops Dominic, and then Cena is stunned. And Liv turns around and jumps into the arms of John Cena. They zoom in, and they basically did the exact same Cena heel turn, minus The Rock, who was, you know, maybe this was the Rubik's Cube answer. Maybe that's what he was thinking all along. This is what the heel turn for Cena was meant to do. We're going to do this amazing reversal of the heel turn at Survivor Series. So Liv gets this serious look on her face. Let's go, and kicks John right in the balls, just like he did to Cody. And then from there, it's another 619, his third one he's taken of the match, a belt shot by Liv and a frog splash by Dominic to win the title in 16 minutes and 48 seconds. Dominic and Liv are back together, which I think is a good way to go with this story. Like, let's not blow this up first. You got to have Dominic managing both Roxanne and Liv first. And he's got the title back, so you've corrected this Cena belt problem going into the retirement match.
Yeah. I thought this was an excellent match. It was my match of the night, in fact. For a match built around five separate interferences, I felt this was among the best version of like a House of Style torture match that you could possibly create. I thought every cheating spot to me had like a good amount of creativity and entertaining purpose attached to it. Obviously, you had the incredible atmosphere for the stadium show with Cena's penultimate match. And I thought like this crowd sounded to me like they were incredibly satisfied by every beat.
This was the hottest the crowd was for the show, was this match.
Yeah. Like, first, despite maybe my issues with the way it was sort of like captured, I thought the Rana shoulder intentional botch looked really good. And Liv and Raquel, I thought, also did a great job. And okay, like, maybe to some, the Pop Rocks might have been a step too far, but I'd more so look at that spot as an example of how egoless John Cena is, because I have no doubt that plenty of main eventers that are men in his position would turn that spot down. But he took it, and I thought it was a very effective near fall, or could have been a very effective near fall, that ultimately made Raquel and Roxanne look really good. Balor and JD coming in, I mean, their purpose really was to just serve up the double AA, which will likely be Cena's last time ever doing it, and his limited capacity. I thought it provided like a really impressive, you know, spectacle for like probably the last time that he'll do one of these. And then, you know, of course, I just think like Dominic was tremendous in this match. Cena, you know, for like, he is very much a five moves guy, and that's even more so the case now than it was, you know, many years ago. But when you have the stature, when you have the setting, when you have the crowd, I thought like the orchestration of what he's still able to do within this match made it really compelling, you know, like as if he's like a painter who can still paint a great painting even with like five colors. And then of course you have the whole Liv Morgan thing, the five colors of doom. And then, of course, you have Liv, which I thought was also a really well-done return. You know, the timing was great. Playing with our expectations, I thought, was really well done. I don't know if you noticed, but to me, the swat that she gave Dom looked like it had completely missed.
Looked like she grazed him on the top of the head. Like, there was contact, but yeah, she didn't, like, slap him. So,
and, of course, in the moment, you're thinking, oh, okay, about botch. But in hindsight, of course, it might actually be, you know, considered of great attention to detail, the fact that she didn't actually make contact to Dominic. Then you had that great sequence with the low blow coupled with 619, then the belt shot, then the splash, all within like 10, like 5 seconds even, you know, and it resulted in like a really great combo involving a 2-on-1 that justified a John Cena finally going down. So I like, again, as a House of Torture style match, this was probably about as great of one that I think you could expect.
I thought that I definitely wasn't as high on it as you were, but I think with a lot of the limitations you have, number one, like, this worked for the crowd. I thought that primarily this crowd was here for John Cena, and I think that certainly bore itself out in what was to follow. I really thought that they, like, the middle part, to me, it was just like such a layup, like doing this near fall spot, that I just thought that was just a golden opportunity that got blown. And I just could not fathom why we had this mess up of this. Oh, he's not going to count. I'm like, my God, the pop is just waiting for you right there. All you, like, you did all the heavy lifting and didn't get the payoff at the end of it. I agree in terms of like your House of Torture style of match. That's a very kind of demeaning term these days in pro wrestling, but you know, that is kind of what this match was constructed on. It was like all these twists and turns and getting this belt to Dominic. You can argue either way about, you know, Cena keeping this belt, just going in with one big win before the retirement match, but they opted to go it this way. It really does not matter for Cena. This retirement match is going to be gigantic in 2 weeks, and he can win that match. He can lose that match, just like he could have lost or won here as
it,
well.
It doesn't matter for Cena, but I think it matters a lot to Dominic, you know, because we are sitting now potentially at looking at Dominic as being the last person to beat John Cena, because I think there's a very good chance that Cena goes out on top and, you know, ending his last match. So Dominic Mysterio.
What if Liv Morgan is secretly with Gunther, though? Maybe that's the turn we get.
I don't know.
Saturday night's main event. But maybe Stephanie is secretly with Gunther, and that's why she'll be ringside.
I don't discount an angle, you know, like it's so weird having Stephanie on the announce desk. I mean, I don't discount that, you know, an angle being the reason why. But yeah, like I think Cena losing this match to me raises my expectations for him to actually go out on top in his last match, and that would mean Dominic Mysterio can forever potentially claim that he's the last person to beat John Cena.
Let me clarify here, because I have not watched this interview she did with Megan Morant, but from our own site here, it states McMahon confirms she will co-host alongside Joe Tessitore. So that may
Not commentary.
That might be at the
Jets. She's in the Jesse role.
Not doing commentary. She's that Jesse. Makes sense. That makes more sense. And then you'd have Cole on the call. So that's a much better role for Stephanie McMahon. It makes a lot more sense.
I'm glad you corrected it before other people did it for us.
Well, there you have it. Cena's left in the ring alone. Thank you, Cena Chance. And then, you know, he does what anyone else in his position would do. He goes to the floor and he has an in-depth conversation with Nick Khan's kid in the front row.
Right. Okay.
This kid was really popular. Did you notice, like, that's who Brock went to after winning War Games? Went to go chat with his kid.
You got to butter
up
the boss's son. Are you kidding me?
So, more commercial breaks. I went for a jog, came back, still had more time. So Stephanie Vaquerre against Nikki Bella.
Well, hold on a second. Did you miss the women's ad? The women's WrestleMania poker ad or whatever was?
I saw this one. They put this out a few days ago.
Oh, you did? Oh, did they? Really?
Like Friday?
Wait, hold on a second. With the Liv Morgan reveal? No. I don't think so.
Oh, no, I didn't see the Liv Morgan reveal.
Yeah, this was like a big one that built up to the reveal of, like, you never know who's going to show up, and it shows Liv Morgan.
Well, the one I saw had the teaser with the empty seat. And,
okay.
I missed this on the broadcast where I guess they showed Liv.
Yeah. Which, I mean, as a sort of 1-2 from the Liv Morgan return to actually having this, I thought it was really well orchestrated. I mean,
you know, in WCW, this would have aired after the Women's War Games match before she returned. 75% chance it would have.
Somebody could have hit the wrong button somewhere, I'm sure, but I thought this was really well done.
Then it's Stephanie Vaquerre and Nikki Bella for the Women's World Championship, and Nikki jumps her at the bell, and Vaquerre misses a knee drop on the edge, so Nikki takes over with the heat. Wade says how she has found a new gear tonight. I was waiting for this next gear. Nikki teases her own devil's kiss, and Stephanie won't allow it. She rolls her up, and Nikki then avoids the devil's kiss by rolling to the rope. That's what these matches are all now geared around. This crowd, all they wanted was the devil's kiss, and they were quiet until they got this devil's kiss. Vaquerre wrestled well here. She hit like a tilt-a-whirl, bridged on top for a two count, hit this nasty dragon screw, and then the SVB for a two count, and Nikki comes back, goes for the rack attack 2.0, but Vaquerre gets her foot on the rope and then drops a knee on Nikki on the edge and then gets the devil's kiss and hits it on top of the announcer's desk.
Mm-hmm.
Extra damaging on the desk. And then rolls her into the ring.
I mean, it's a harder surface.
Yes, it is.
Maybe like, it's not like she's doing, the PTO, you know, submission move on top of the desk. Like, this would actually hurt more on the desk.
Would this also take some damage on your knees as well?
Well, yes, of course, that too.
All I want to say is I would love to contrast the count that these two women were allotted that poor Tala Tonga was not given on SmackDown last night when this guy was counted out in like 3 seconds. And these two, they were, they did like a whole routine on the floor. So they come in, another devil's kiss is hit. Crowd reacted to that, and then Stephanie won with her corkscrew splash in 12 minutes and 22 seconds. the crowd was down for this one for like a long portion of it. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't think this match really just, this was not a pay-per-view level match. It was too long. It was not all that spirited with Nikki working as a heel. And yep. I just didn't think like of, these are your four matches, your four big programs. This one did not stand out to me as like being on a show of this level.
Yeah. I mean, number one, it was already a tough spot for these two to be in coming off of like John Cena's second last match to many people, maybe as big of a draw, if not more so than the War Games itself, you know, and
this really was the intermission type of match because you knew what was coming up next and you were coming off this big high of the guy that ever like you could have argued like if Cena was going over, I think you could have argued to close the show with Cena on this night. But given
he's
what
not
they were
going
doing,
over.
Then the match order was what it was.
Yeah. Like on a four match show with like half hour, like intermissions between each match, I would argue like no match should feel like an intermission, but unfortunately with the way that this was structured. And I would say with the lack of heat for this one in comparison to the other three matches, this felt unfortunately like the bathroom break match. I certainly don't think it helped that these two didn't have any presence on Raw. Like they weren't on the go home show. And, you know, like to me, the feud probably peaked with the turn and they didn't really do much to continue to build it beyond that. But all that said, I don't even know how much they could have done to really like match the level of like star power and sort of like expectation of War Games and John Cena's second last match. So that had a lot going for it. And unfortunately, the big thing is that the wrestling was just not good enough. You know, playing heel, I think, really does, to me, expose maybe, like, where Nikki Bella's, you know, ability is at the moment. It requires her to take control of the match for a good portion, and her repertoire with her, like hard camera chin lock type of maneuvers and playing to the crowd just like doesn't look varied or intense enough by a modern standard. I thought her timing was off for a lot of the match, and it just certainly didn't do enough to bring an already sort of like disengaged crowd back in. So in hindsight, I think this would have been better served like on a different card, on a non-stadium card, or just, you know, I probably a bit higher than TV, but I certainly not like one of four matches at this very important stadium show. The holiday season is fast approaching, but if you still have a few people left on your shopping list, don't worry. Uncommon Goods takes the hassle out of holiday gifting with thousands of unique, one-of-a-kind presents you won't find anywhere else. Many of these gifts are high-quality, handmade, or crafted by independent artists and small makers. One standout gift this season is the personalized Pet Family Blanket, an exclusive item created by artist Shelly Klein and available only at Uncommon Goods. Shelly creates custom portraits in her sweetly simple illustration style, where you can customize skin tones, hair, clothing colors, and pet details to make it truly personal. Measuring 50 by 60 inches, made from soft cotton and polyester, it's perfect for snuggling with your furry family. Plus, each purchase supports small makers and donates $1 to a nonprofit of your choice, including the International Rescue Committee and American Forests. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have two editions of Rewind Away set for you, including a patron's pick where you have voted for us to review the Survivor Series from 1991, Hulk Hogan's Gravest Challenge. Then it's over to 2002 and a review of the very first WWE draft involving Raw and SmackDown as they kick off the brand extension. David Bitsenspan is going to join me as we review Video Killed the Radio Star, a documentary on Bubba the Love Sponge, and the sex tape involving Hulk Hogan. Plus, we will have reviews of TNA Final Resolution, New Japan's World Tag League Final, Collision Course every single week, and XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. I got duped into this New Day segment with Grayson Waller. I thought they were doing a real segment, and it turned out to be a promo. They fucking got me. So I'm not even going to mention what they were promoting.
So, like, I guess like they're your default, like what, video game guys to help promote shit. But man, they have done nothing with the New Day. And I just, at this point, like they would be names I wouldn't be that surprised to see if like we hear that their contracts aren't being renewed. You know, like they feel like they're of the category of like a Dolph Ziggler at this point, where like guys who have been here for a long time that are probably making a really good amount of money, but just aren't even being utilized at all, other than like for something like this that honestly anybody could do, in my opinion, or at least like it's not really taking full advantage of like what talents these guys actually have. So I don't know. I've been so disappointed in them this year.
Well, Wade, would you have been disappointed if you had bought tickets to a WWE event and been told that Xfinity is upgrading your seat and using Roxanne Perez to inform you of this? I mean, this to me is, this would just be, you know what Mark Shapiro was thinking here.
We make mistakes in business every day.
How can you give away the gas in the car? We're upgrading people. Terrible.
This fan,
this fan was like, he looked like, I don't know. He's, I don't know, man.
This looked like a little kid who just hit puberty like 2 weeks ago, and he's still really much, like, very much getting used to his like adult sized body. Like standing next to Roxanne Perez, this kid looked like a giant, but like still, I mean, behaved like a little child, really.
Well, good for him. He got his seat upgrade. And then it was time for the men's War Games match, or as Michael Cole called it, the WWE All-Star Game. Is that how we should market this next year? It's the All-Star Game, where you get the National League and the American League players all in one match together. You get Raw and SmackDown under one roof, mm-hmm. or two roofs, I guess, for the night.
No roofs, actually.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they've eliminated the roofs. Punk is out first, so this guy was going to go the distance in this one, and Braun Breaker is second. Break being the operative word here, and somehow this man didn't in this match, but that was a goddamn miracle. I have taken like quite the like fascination with Braun Breaker's gear. Tonight he wore a singlet that read "badass" across the chest. And then over the leg, it just reads "dog."
Dog. Badass dog.
Badass dog.
Yeah, that's what he is.
Okay. Yeah. Those are all things that I guess.
Like all of his gear says that.
Badass dog.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. Breaker. I'm sorry. I was just taking this all in. Okay.
If this guy didn't deliver spears that looked like that, I think he'd like be the like. He'd be the corniest wrestler in the world. Like a guy with the name Braun Breaker. And
you realize this guy would have been Butch's like mate if he had been called up by Vince McMahon.
Yes, certainly.
They're in heat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Breaker catches him off the top and just suplexes Punk, throws him all over the place. And Drew McIntyre is third. He took a goddamn eternity getting to this ring. So it's 2-on-1, hits a claymore, and goddamn, he was just trying to grind Punk's face into the fence. Punk and Rhodes would end up doing blood in this match. Cody is fourth, so it is now 2-on-2. And Drew shuts the door on Cody. So Cody has to climb over and do the exact same spot they came up with for AJ's entrance into the match. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you know it, he got into the match. So Punk's butt busted open, as we mentioned here. And then they do a spot where Cody winds up and he elbows Punk in the face.
Yeah.
But then they get back on the same page. They hit a heart attack together.
So like they did a friendly fire spot, which I enjoyed, like, you know, just kind of teasing some sort of dissent between like the two champions with each other. But it didn't play into anything. And coming out of the match,
in the post match, Punk does make reference to it when the three of them are all with Reigns are standing in the ring, and Punk does make a reference that you elbowed me, but it wasn't.
But that's
made
not the match they're building. That's not the match they're building to.
No,
that's not the feud they're building to. Certainly,
or at least not right now. They could get to that match, but I don't think that's imminent.
But it's already being overshadowed by a bigger match that they're building to. I'm not thinking at all about Punk and.
Well, now you are,
Cody.
They made you think about it. They hit a heart attack onto Drew, and then they gave everybody watching a heart attack by showcasing this doomsday device to Braun Breaker, and he comes down on his fucking neck. This was Henry Godwin levels of bad, and I think everyone thought this guy was dead. Braun is like off camera for several minutes. Cody immediately is like on all fours and is just checking in on this guy. Punk would come over to check on this guy, and somehow he got back into this match, but he did disappear for several minutes, and this guy is just a freak that he got up. But dude, there's a toll that this kind of stuff has on you. These kinds of falls that, you know, everyone is going to, hey, the guy was fine. It's like, nah, this stuff, it adds up over time. He will feel this at some point. This was nasty. He was very lucky. He was significantly hurt. This was a really, really bad fall. And there have been guys that have broken their necks from this spot.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the match continues, and we got some bionic elbows. And then Logan Paul is in fifth. He brings in chairs. Cody and Logan would be seated on top of the cage, trading shots, as I'm sure Andy Ruiz was taking notes. Jimmy Uso was sixth. He brings out a table, which was the second most over thing next to John Cena on this show. Braun has also somehow been busted up under his eye. So I'm sure this man is going to be waking up just feeling wonderful on Sunday. He hits the Breakensteiner to Cody, which the cameras missed, but thankfully they replayed it. And Cody is busted open above his eye. Seventh is Bronson Reed, who they mentioned broke his ankle doing the tsunami spot last year. So what does he do? He immediately hits three consecutive tsunamis onto Punk, onto Jimmy, and then to Cody. And he proves, look at me. I'm indestructible. And the heels just dominate here. Jey Uso is out eighth, thankfully just doing a normal entrance instead of through the crowd. And we get a super kick party, 1D onto Logan. And then we got a callback spot. He called for the encore, and his music played, and everyone started dancing. And this was a spot Ole used to do in some of the earliest iterations of War Games.
Yeah, I think he did. Sure, of course. Yeah. The first person to coin the phrase yeet, Ole Anderson.
Yes. They just keep like dancing. Like, dude, CM Punk is fucking La Parca playing the chair. And then Lesnar's music plays. I mean, we weren't exactly, on the brink of death here that these men were fighting towards. But then Brock comes in and he just murders everybody. Germans, belly to bellies. He F5s all the baby faces. He's the only one left standing as the crowd chants OTC. He's got a chair. And then as the countdown begins, he stands on the steps and meets Roman on the floor. And they explain that Brock left the ring before the match technically began. So therefore he has not forfeited the match for his team, which would have been an awesome ending if that was the case.
I kept asking, like, what would have happened if like one of these guys never came back with the match beyond begin?
It would be,
they'd still be fighting now.
We'd just still be waiting. Yeah. We'd be waiting until next year. So Lesnar takes him around the ring. He eats a bunch of Superman punches. And then on the fourth, catches Roman and F5s him through a desk and brings Reigns into the ring. And thus the match begins. There's an F5 to Roman. Cody's in for the save. There's a GTS into a crossroads onto Lesnar. And Logan saves with a splash and then is handed a pair of brass knuckles from Heyman through the fence. Nails Cody with them, nails Jimmy. Reigns then staggers up, spears Logan, and takes the brass knuckles for himself to use on Bronson and Drew. And this is when there's a spear by Reigns onto Breaker. And then Reigns spears Lesnar through a table while he's got Jay on his shoulders. Drew does his phantom low blow on Cody that we miss, but eventually get caught up on. The director had to do the Jey Uso, and let's run that back. Sure. Braun then spears Cody. There's a GTS to Logan, and then Braun makes the save. And this is when the mystery man climbs the cage, enters. CM Punk had, what's going on here? And this masked man proceeds to strike Punk with a super kick and then delivers a curb stomp before exiting the cage. And that leaves Braun Breaker to spear Punk and pin the WWE champion in 39 minutes, 24 seconds. And you have the mystery of who this man is. And I did not mind this, like this run-in deal that they're going to play with the idea that Rollins, is he really hurt, or is this some guy that is just your imposter? It might end up being totally ludicrous, but I didn't hate the idea that they've got here.
I thought it was kind of groan inducing personally, especially like as the finish of this match. I don't hate it in theory.
Well, that's probably where this all heads.
But I think I might
CM Punk and Austin Theory. I mean, yeah. he's finally going to get his Austin match after all this time.
Yeah, like sure, like to have a like what is it, like a fake Sting type of like NWO scenario come in, like it's perfectly fine. I guess I didn't love it as the finish of this match because it ultimately like made the match feel unsatisfying in having this sort of dangling mystery, inconclusive of who this person is, as we just kind of go like it was an interference.
I like the idea. I totally get the idea of like this climaxing the match as well. Like that's a separate thing. I think they can have fun with this on TV for several weeks at least. And the way this was done. Finish your thought on.
Well, I thought it was overall, again, like I find War Games entertaining, period. So to me, like I have a base level of enjoyment for almost all of these matches, plus the incredible atmosphere. And I think the great star power that, rolls into like ultimately what is like a compelling, however long this match is. But to me, unlike the women's match, like the wrestling, maybe better in this match, but I thought the match layout was way better in the women's match. To me, like my biggest problem with this match is just this build and the match itself really made your world champions in Cody and CM Punk look and feel a lot less than, like the message to me is clear watching this match. Brock and Roman are at this level and your world champions are a strong notch below it, and if that wasn't obvious, well, Roman was able to take out Brock by himself, but you needed Punk and Cody to team up together and, to at least like give a near fall to Brock Lesnar. Punk took the pin here. Brock and Roman are the superhero humans who didn't mess up. I didn't like that. I also found the finish like pretty unsatisfying in that somehow Roman, after going on this like superhuman tear, delivering Superman punches to like the entire team, somehow is taken out off camera by a Braun Breaker spear, and he's nowhere to be found for the duration of the match. You wouldn't even like remember that he was still a part of this match with the way it rolled out. I thought the women's match had a much better explanation for why the entirety of the heel team was nullified via the Io Sky trash can spot. So overall, I just didn't feel like the men's match flowed as well for me. I didn't think there were as many like great big moments, littered throughout this one, the way that I think like the women's match managed to like draw upon a lot of the prior history between them all. This had some of that, but it just ultimately didn't feel as satisfying for me, even though the work was better.
I didn't think this match really got going until like the final, like when the match beyond began, and it's like you got a pretty compelling like 6-7 minutes where everyone's going crazy. Then you had like the run-in, which I mean you can take it or leave it. I like the fact that Braun got the pin, but I really hope he's not just the Rumble challenger for Punk, and that the bigger plan is Punk with Roman or something involving Cody as well. Like I think Braun should be your big focus. We should not be building towards Brock for a big, big match at this point.
All the heat's on this mystery man. I mean, it's not even on Braun Breaker. Like, what you're left with is that this mystery man beat CM Punk, not necessarily anybody else.
Well, I think they did enough with Braun, like, still getting the pin here. But, yeah, you're right. Like, the big story is, like, who this guy is at the end of it. And this will be very disappointing if it is Austin Theory as your new member of the Vision.
Who else could it be, I guess? What are the other candidates?
Santos Escobar.
Who would it be that wouldn't make it disappointing?
Andrade.
Seriously, though. Like, who would it be that wouldn't be disappointing?
I think those are your options. I lean very heavily that this is going to be Austin Theory's introduction.
Yeah, it's probably Austin Theory.
Just to wrap this up, Reigns helps Punk up, and they show a sign of respect towards each other. And then Cody stands up to Reigns, and there's a long stare down between Cody and Roman. And at the end, Reigns tells him, "This is the last time we will ever team. You got it? I got it."
Mm-hmm.
And we fade to black. Got it?
So if it wasn't obvious enough, Roman is not aiming for Punk's championship, he's aiming for Cody's championship. And I would probably the WrestleMania tease has been rumored.
Or you're going to have Roman like win this Rumble, and you're gonna do a misdirect here, and it ends up being.
So what's the point of doing this then?
Yeah, he's got his eyes on both titles.
Well, he helped Punk up. He shaped Punk's hand, but didn't shake Cody's hand. I mean, isn't it obvious then what they're building to?
Means he's taking Punk's. It means Punk's eye is off the ball. He's not going to see Roman coming.
I don't know. Like, this felt like a pretty deliberate, you know, WrestleMania like early tease to me.
Is that a satisfying redo here? Has it been enough time that you're interested in seeing this again as your Mania buildup for next April?
So they're one-on-one, you know, at WrestleMania. So I suppose it feels necessary to complete the trilogy. As I think it could possibly work if you get a Cody heel turn, which would freshen things up greatly, you know, because the way that this was built, certainly the babyface momentum, the crowd is more so behind a Roman Reigns than they are with a Cody Rhodes, who kind of feels like a bit of a chump. And if he's renewed via heel turn, then okay, maybe that would be somewhat interesting.
If you do not have your next generation babyface star, I wouldn't even be thinking of turning Cody at this point. And I do not see that person that is ready to just assume the mantle. It's not going to be Roman. It's not going to be Punk.
But if they do this match, who's the crowd going to default to? It's not going to be Cody.
I don't know about that.
I don't think so. I think Roman, at this point, like, given just how special he feels with his intermittent appearances, it feels way more special than Cody Rhodes.
Well, we will see where they go here. I was disappointed with the Survivor Series. I thought that this was a show that I don't think any of the matches to me really exceeded expectations. I thought that both War Games, I expected a lot more out of the men's match. Like, I thought this will be a really, really well-booked match. You've got so much talent in there. And at the end, I thought you got what will be a forgettable War Games overall. And I think, quite honestly, like, I am going to compare these two blood and guts, and I don't think there's a prayer that people are taking these two matches over what we saw on free television 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So I thought that was a very clear, running them so close together. I did not think it worked in WWE's favor this time. Yeah. They just felt like lesser matches that had a whole lot less intensity. And in terms of, like, the reason we raved about Hell in a Cell last year is because you had this big grudge and it felt like an intense blow off. And we were talking about that night. The next time you run Hell in a Cell, it's going to feel like a bigger deal because of this intensity, that it's this violent climax. And that's what War Games was at a time. And I didn't get that feel in either of these matches. It was like...
So to be fair, Blood and Guts didn't have that either, in my opinion. Like, it didn't feel like it was something that was built, you know, like... to something that necessitated a War Games to blow off like a faction versus faction feud.
But by the end of those matches, I think that was the feeling you had of those matches.
Because of the quality of the matches and because of the storytelling.
Yeah. I mean, you can certainly criticize the buildup to Blood and Guts this year, but I thought the matches delivered in a big way that if you did spend your time to watch those, I think you came away rewarded. And I felt this to be one of the, like, of major shows this year, I thought this was a disappointing one.
Given, I think, like, the hype and given, like, the sort of, like, setting, given just the fact that it's only four matches that I think we can, you know, probably be a lot more critical of versus, like, this being, I don't know, maybe, like, a six-match show or something like that. Yeah, I think those are incredibly fair comparisons. Let me also just say, like, just to kind of close the topic on the Blood and Guts comparisons. I feel like there are going to be people that'll, like, say, you know, well, how can you compare the two? One of them was allowed to have blood, and if this match was allowed to have that much blood. Well, I'm saying if this match was allowed to have as much blood as the AEW matches were allowed to, then we'd be talking very differently. Okay, maybe. But I'm not even, like, taking the blood out of the question. I just think, like, the crafting of the matches, which was stronger, both in the men's and the women's Blood and Guts versus this, you know, the action overall was stronger. Again, I have a base level of satisfaction just with, like, these matches, period. But I think in comparison to
WWE, has done plenty of great War Games matches.
Exactly.
Like, from NXT to the last several years when you had some of the big Bloodline matches. Like, this is not a looking at, well, WWE is somehow handicapped by these. This was just not, to me, of the level of even the last several when it's just been main roster War Games. Forget the NXT comparisons. Yeah. There have been much better war games, especially when you include NXT.
Forget the blood and guts comparisons. Just comparing war games, like WWE Survivor Series war games to itself, I feel like this had plenty, I think, to criticize about either match. And as a show itself, you take two war games that in the totality of war games might be considered disappointing. You take a Nikki versus Stephanie match that I think probably unanimously disappointing, in my opinion, as one of four matches on the show. And then you take a John Cena Dominic match that I absolutely loved, but it sounds like, John, you did not. And I imagine a lot of people might agree with you.
I didn't hate it. I did not hate that match. I wasn't as high on it as you were.
Okay. Well,
but I thought for like what you have, I think you'd be happy with what they produced out of that. If you were to tell me Cena and Dominic are going to go like 17 minutes, I would expect a lot of like all the run-ins and teases. I thought it could have been better, but I didn't look at that as like some disaster or anything like that.
But for somebody's time invested, you know, like what, like 3 hours plus, and having like,
I would not recommend this show.
Yeah, it's hard to say that this was a good show, and I would not say that this was, in comparison to the standard of a PLE in 2025, pay-per-view in 2025, this was a disappointing show. Yeah.
Well, on that note, maybe we're completely wrong, so we are going to go to the feedback at forum.postwrestling.com, and let us start off here with Stig, who writes, first PLE I've stayed up for in ages. I'm in the UK. And all I can think of is how Blood and Guts spoiled us. Both War Games matches were the worst ones they've ever done and felt so tame. The women's match only had one decent spot, but it's the same thing that's been done every year, and the men's was extremely forgettable overall. I know WWE will never go to the lengths that AEW does, but it would be nice to see something that makes the cage worthwhile. Take the cage away, it feels like you'd get the same matches for both. I just found the whole PLE outside of Cena's match really boring. I honestly think if it wasn't for post-wrestling, I'd be done with WWE. If this is the result of having to use War Games, they should retire it for now and only bring it out when it's warranted. Now, the counter to that is this concept put 45,000 people here in a baseball stadium. So let's not like write off that this gimmick is not an effective one. It tells you that there is an interest in this style of show built around War Games. And I think it's much more effective than the old Survivor Series elimination matches or brand versus brand.
It's really saved and revived the Survivor Series brand, you know, now as the annual destination for a War Games match. And I would also say, though, logistically, I don't know if you can ever like book one of these without just setting it as at one specific part of the calendar because of, well, the map, the seating map that you'd have to, you know, carve out just for this particular setup. All right, let's go to Andrew from Cape Breton, who says, tonight's show was fascinating. I wonder if AEW scheduled Blood and Guts to be so close to the show to give people the comparison point. I understand that they aren't going to be as violent, but the women's match was so bad as a War Games match that I now wonder if they should have women's War Games matches at all. It feels like WWE is simply doing them for the illusion of equality. I don't want to say that they can't do a match like that. They probably can, but it feels like under the current WWE regime, the women aren't allowed to be as violent as the men. The men's War Games match was blood and guts compared to the women's one, especially with Punk bleeding and Braun Breaker taking an old-school doomsday device like you would see on Crockett Television. So with that, I thought the War Games match is underdelivered. The two singles matches were much better. Nikki Bella had the best match of her career against Stephanie Vaquer, who is one of the best wrestlers overall in the company, and Cena versus Dom ended up being a fun match. So
I don't know if they see some big distinction. I didn't see the men's match as some real violent spectacle. I mean, the doomsday device was not like that was a mess up of a doomsday device. That was not supposed to go like that. And really, like the Punk blood was like, I don't know, that was as minimal as something. Like, I did not see some gulf of difference between the two. I thought both were just very just if you're looking for these matches to tune in and see really violent matches, I didn't think either match was going that direction. Even the weapon spots that WWE utilizes a lot, like they downplayed that significantly.
And you've had plenty of years where the women's matches are at least comparable or if not better than the men's. So I would not take this just 1 year as a reason to write them off completely. Before we move on, we have some super chats here from our live viewers at youtube.com/postwrestling. We really only allow super chats at this point for our pay-per-view and PLE reviews. So thank you guys for watching us. A lot of you guys, almost 400 of you watching live at youtube.com/postwrestling. We're back every Monday, Wednesday, Friday with reviews of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Live, however, only for our Post Wrestling Cafe patrons, who get an extended version of these shows with John and I talking about news of the day, feedback, and of course our entire catalog of monthly bonuses that we offer for Post Wrestling Cafe patrons, including our entire archive that's out there right now for $6 a month. So go to postwrestlingcafe.com. But thank you for people who decided to give us a little bit more of a tip here with these super chats. And let's first go to Jumanji Hunter, who sends $5 to ask, or to say, another boring show. How did the creative that was great the last two-ish years produce such boring slash bad product this year? Enough Bloodline, new blood, please.
I mean, they are trying, certainly, with like the Vision to get like Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed up to that level, in particular Bron Breakker. But I think it's a relevant discussion point, is that you're looking at all these main event players that, you know, they're not getting younger, and it's guys that they have built this around. Like, you know, Jey Uso, has he really made, like, this is an interesting year to look at with Jey Uso, someone they went all the way with for the first half of the year, and he's still stayed at a fairly elevated level. But is he like that top level main event star, that you would want in that position? And, you know, it's like we're going through another WrestleMania cycle where it is going to be like Roman and Punk and Cody in real significant spots. And, you know, how much like demand there is for a lot of this, like Roman and Punk, that would be my argument for that, is that at least, like, you could argue, like, it's a fresh singles match, but it is also a program that we got pretty much going into Mania last year, just with the elimination of Seth this time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, you know, they've certainly yet to reach the heights of the Bloodline storyline, and certainly the Cody Rhodes, you know, Roman Reigns chase. And maybe that's reason for them enough to want to, like, revisit it for this year's WrestleMania. So if we're looking at that as, like, the peak of this quote-unquote era, they've certainly yet to attain that. I think they were hoping that the Cena heel turn would have led them there, but it's certainly not been that. So despite all that, though, like, looking at business, they probably don't have, like, Ari and Mark Shapiro probably have nothing to complain about, because they're making more money than ever. So
good storyline, good narrative.
Thank you, Jumanji Hunter. Let's go to Ben, who sends $20, $22, in fact. Thank you very much, Ben. He says, when you guys were in Winnipeg for UFC, a guy bought you beers and took off. You said later on a podcast he should have stayed. I just found out that was my friend Chris. I'll drink with you guys and invite him if you ever come back. And he says, cheers, guys. Wow. That's
that's a long-term 12-year cliffhanger solved on this night. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
for
Chris.
That, for those beers. That would have been, what, like, I don't know, 10 years ago at least?
More, yeah.
Well, we owe you next time we see you, Chris. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Ben.
We'll go to Jeremy in Texas. Once upon a time, Jeremy in Texas grew up in San Diego. It was a treat to come home to see family and also see this show at the home of the Padres. San Diego has never had a major four event before. This place was packed. I'd have to think San Diego will get another big event down the line. Seeing Cena's second to last match was a privilege, even though he lost. The women's War Games match seemed better than the men's, with the men's finish feeling a bit flat. They couldn't reveal the Masked Man to the 40,000 people there. I guess we've got that tease for WrestleMania, maybe. I really hope it's not a three-way, inserting Cody for Rollins. Overall, the largest crowd ever for a Survivor Series. This did feel disappointing. I think, like, people are annoyed that you didn't get the reveal, but, like, the whole purpose of this is to tease, like, is this Seth Rollins playing another ruse on everybody? Or, like, you want to play this out so that when you do the reveal, it's got some impact to it, rather than just, like, what's the drama in just revealing him as soon as, like, that's the whole cliffhanger here, is that is Seth fucking with everybody, and then it turns out not to be.
Understood. I think Jeremy, who, like, got a ticket to attend the show live, I think can rightfully feel upset about like being in the setting and like the size of crowd and probably the ticket pricing that he was like, you know, forced to pay for these great tickets, it looked like, and not getting the reveal of a mystery and rather just getting the question instead.
You know? I mean, no one bought the ticket though for this angle that no one knew about either. I mean, that's more so that you're disappointed with the show, which you can totally complain about if you weren't happy with the show.
Yeah, I suppose like maybe somebody would have bought a ticket hoping for a complete experience, or at least as complete of an experience that like would offer you some attribution to who resulted in the finish, rather than a mystery man being the reason why this match ended.
December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have two editions of Rewind Away set for you, including a patron's pick where you have voted for us to review the Survivor Series from 1991, Hulk Hogan's Gravest Challenge. Then it's over to 2002 and a review of the very first WWE draft involving Raw and SmackDown as they kick off the brand extension. David Bitsenspan is going to join me as we review Video Killed the Radio Star, a documentary on Bubba the Love Sponge, and the sex tape involving Hulk Hogan. Plus, we will have reviews of TNA Final Resolution, New Japan's World Tag League Final, Collision Course every single week, and XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up now at postwrestlingcafe.com. We'll go to, well, why don't you take this one?
Well, first let's go to Andrew, who says, who's been a member of our YouTube channel, which of course we also serve up our Post Wrestling Cafe exclusive to. So thank you very much, Andrew. He says, I think Cody versus Javon in a Saruta versus Misawa style feud could improve the product.
Well, when they call Javon Evans up in 5 years, maybe they'll get around to that feud, yeah?
Perhaps. At some point, yeah. Jumanji Hunter also sends $2 to say, not just creator, WWE work rate has taken a hit too. Would you agree with that?
Has taken a hit? You could argue some of it. I mean, it's like, I didn't think we had any, like when we are talking about just the straight, like, in-ring product of WWE, I mean, it's like, you, how many blowaway matches are we typically getting that are not involving an Ilya Dragunov, for instance?
Gunther.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly are those there, but in terms, like, tonight's show, like, are there any matches here that it's like, you're going to see?
I mean, Io Sky, you know, like, the women's division on Raw, I thought, like, for a while there was responsible for a lot of the heights on TV. It's hard for me to say, like, it's been that different now versus what it was, you know, many, many months ago. I don't feel like
I also don't think that's going to be the catalyst for, like, a decline in popularity. It's not going to be the wrestling itself. It's going to be, like, the engagement in these characters and the different pairings that you have and having things that feel fresh. And sometimes having younger talent that does, you know, that feeds those other factors is that just lifts everything. But that's not always the case. Sometimes it's just the right story that clicks, and wrestling is well down the line of something that's going to be any kind of difference maker for your product.
We have a members YouTube members message here from Andy, who's been a member for 2 years of our YouTube channel over at Post Wrestling YouTube.com/postwrestling. He says, is a lot of this creative decline down to us having seen all of Triple H's patterns and having seen everything from this roster?
I don't know if you're talking about like the Triple H's patterns. I think at the moment, like, again, it would be very difficult for you to mount a case to Paul Levesque that his creative is not working when they have all of these successes that, like, you may not be enjoying this creative, but I don't think that's going to incentivize them to believe that this is not working. So that's like a divide with the audience. It's like, is this something that would you be blowing this up right now if you were WWE?
Well, who would you go, like, if not Levesque, who would you give the ball to that you would reasonably feel confident could do a better job? Who do they have?
You'd
be taking a risk. And I don't feel like, you know, TKO is in a position to take that level of risk at the moment.
No,
I mean, you like, this is, to even answer this question, you have to acknowledge that there's a creative decline. And I okay, if you're comparing it to, like, I don't know, WrestleMania 40, WrestleMania 41, yeah, maybe you could say that because that storyline just happened to be so hot. But by and large, I don't know how much agreement you would get from, like, their audience that, like, the decline has been that apparent versus maybe just them not finding that hit yet, or the Cena thing not landing as much as they thought that it would.
The Cena thing is like that. That's one that is going to get focused on for a lot. Like that was a big swing and a miss that will, you know, be, it's going to characterize this year for a lot, but this is also going to be the most profitable year in the company's history. And that's like, it's great that you have creative that people are super engaged in. And obviously over the last 3-4 years, we have seen like what the difference is when you do have creative that is hitting on a better level, characters that resonate. It does matter a lot, but this is also one that, okay, if last year we were hitting things like it was an 8 out of 10 and now we're a 6 out of 10, well, 6 out of 10 is still producing this. Like that's not going to dissuade them from believing like that there's some significant overhaul that is necessary. Or if you're seeing this as like patterns that a Paul Levesque has, that those are a negative.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Let's continue here to Luke, of course, who is one of our great editors over on our social media at this point, along with Sean, who's been doing great work on the video and short side. So thank you, Luke. He also is a patron, so he sends some feedback here. Luke says, I haven't actually watched WWE in a long time. I only keep up through the reviews, but I figured I'd watch the show and see the last Cena match and the War Games. But this only confirmed my decision to stop watching. What a nothing show. The quality of wrestling in AEW right now might be at the highest level it's ever been, while WWE wrestling may be at its most formulaic and boring. Just big entrances, ads, celebrities in the crowd, matches that are just finisher after finisher, no interesting use of the cage, no good sequences of moves, no creative weapon spot, just the absolute bare minimum for ridiculous ticket prices. Might have to rewatch Blood and Guts just to feel something again. Cole and Cena made a big deal out of this being the final PLE match. Cena PLE match. What are the odds he truly never wrestles on a PLE again?
I mean, I'm not going to say never. I do think he is like, I don't think mentally he is thinking about wrestling again, but I think you'd be foolish to completely write off somebody, you know, just waking up one day and wanting to do another match.
Jushin Liger came back tonight. Did you catch this?
No. What happened?
He showed up to face Joey Janela.
Okay, well, there you go. One retirement. I mean, he got like 5 years out of his retirement. They did a match?
They did something. I don't know how much of a match this might have actually been, but Joey Janela had Jushin Liger.
Is this at WrestleCade?
WrestleCade, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, retirements are bound to be broken.
Yeah, so maybe John Cena.
Maybe Cena does WrestleCade.
Maybe
that's the comeback. Nas from New York City. I never left negative reviews on this site. Usually if it's a bad show, I just go to bed, but I feel overly compelled to say the show felt so underwhelming. Genuinely feel like the creative has fallen off a cliff. No one in their right mind would continue to pay $30 to watch these. I signed up today mainly for Cena and canceled already. It really isn't worth it. I don't even know what would compel me to fork out $30 for even a rumble after a show like this. I feel the Cena retirement is the only thing propping up business, and I expect business to go down post Cena. I mean, there will be a come down when you like this Cena thing is propping up a lot at the moment. Like you can see the difference he is making for all of these last series of appearances. And the fact tonight, like we credit a lot tonight to War Games. Like Cena deserves credit for this as well.
Oh, yeah.
For the show doing so well. So, yeah, it's like once after December 13th, like there will be a bit of a come down there once like Cena is gone and you don't have this whole farewell tour that a lot of this year has been positioned around.
Yeah. So like the answer to the question, like who would pay $30 to watch these? A lot of people who I think just like are like still feel like they're still feel maybe that like they're the product is hot to them. I only say this because in the back of my mind, I am thinking about the nurses that I encountered who like still watch WWE. I asked them in this during my operation whether or not they watch AEW, and the answer was no. There are plenty of people who, for them being professional wrestling fans, their only thing that they are consuming is WWE with no interest or knowledge of the alternative. So without that comparison point, this to them might not have seen as much of an unsatisfying experience. It probably was still unsatisfying given all the ads and like all the breaks and all that stuff. But without maybe the comparison point of like what, you know, the quality that an AW pay-per-view or like even a TV show would be able to provide, like it's just, it's not really as crazy of an ask for them, I don't think. All right, let's go to Andy, who says, what did you guys think of the decision to go with Cody Reigns, the Cody Reigns rubber match for Mania? Feels like the biggest thing they can run, and there should be an air of unpredictability around the finish. Who is counting the lights in that one?
I mean, if they are going that direction, I think at that point, I mean, it depends like the situation that you're in with like a Roman Reigns. Is there a whole lot of value in positioning a whole Mania season around Roman, and what even are his, like what's the value of a Roman winning that match, for instance?
Yeah. So like, I think for me, the question is whether or not it's a Cody heel turn. And if Cody's going into it as a heel, I would probably pick Cody because that's the fresher thing and allows Roman to chase. So I think it would largely depend on the way that they're building to the match, which we haven't really seen yet.
All right, let's do the last one here. It is a Jurassic Park fan. It's got several points here. I'm not even a violence or blood guy unless the feud calls for it, but after last year's Punk drew Hell in a Cell, I think WWE showed the level of violence they're capable of. So I wonder if tonight's matches felt tame in comparison to this match, even ignoring things like blood and guts. And WWE was pushed by sponsors to make the decision themselves to tone down their use of blood and violence. Also, I'm sick and tired of WWE always opening with the women in these high-profile, multi-person matches and ending with the men, whether it's the Rumble, Chamber, or War Games. It just sends the message that even if the men's match or the build for it is nothing special, the women still have to settle for second billing. And Roxanne and Raquel attacking Cena with their finishers. But would he be able to hit the AA on either of them? And a typical WWE Levesque swerve with Liv attacking and then helping Dominic. So it seems like another unsatisfied viewer tonight.
If they ended the night with the women, like I think that would have been fine. But there's just like still a big level of like a big gap in perceived star power when you have Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes, CM Punk, and Brock Lesnar and Logan Paul in one match. You know, as much as like a Rhea Ripley is, I think, a major star, Becky Lynch is a major star. It still doesn't feel as big, and that's just like me trying to explain why they felt, you know, maybe the men's match was a bigger match to promote for the end.
Their argument would be, and I'm, you know, this is my projecting, is that like we saw tonight where, you know, Stephanie Vaccaro and Nikki Bella had to go out after the Cena match and look at the result there. Now, if you put the men's match on first and Cena and Dominic is second, like what is your concentration of star power on this show and how much of it is produced in those two matches? And for the women to go out last, if we get a crowd that is just totally sucked out, is that a really big, like, does that do the women a service to be put in that position? Like, I think you have to look at it objectively here. What was the match that had the most star power attached to it? It was the men's match, and I think that's how they are booking this. I have a way bigger problem with, like, UFC, for instance, this week, they're going to headline this first January pay-per-view with this interim title that's just like, it's a joke that they are putting an interim title here. It's a joke that Justin Gaethje and Patty Pimblett are the ones fighting, and that you have literally a fight in Amanda Nunes and Kayla Harrison that you can argue is the biggest women's fight in MMA history. You can make that claim. And that to me, and this is not a card where you're asking people to spend $70 and we need, like, to me, like, that would be like, what a signal from the UFC that starting off this new era, we're putting the women in the main event spot. It's a legitimately big fight. It's a much more important fight to me than Patty Pimblett and Justin Gaethje. And I would say that even if they were on pay-per-view, I would say Harrison and Nunez is the bigger fight and the bigger story to tell than those two. So I would say in this argument, that would be the one I would be much more willing to argue as opposed to tonight's match placement, for instance.
Let's go to One final super chat here, and that comes to us from Jumanji Hunter, who sends a combined $10 to say, I know the business is good. He's trying to engage in a continued conversation here, but Jumanji Hunter continues to say, I know the business is good, but I don't think there's been five good SmackDowns this year, which feels insane. I'd rather Oba, Javon, Sol Ruka, Rhea, Io, Braun main event Mania, but I know it's just going to be Roman again who wins the Rumble. Again, this kind of plays into our greater conversation. Like, I think those would be better matches. But who's going to sell more tickets?
Well, you just wait until January. That's when you're going to get your great run of SmackDowns, okay? They're going to have 3 hours.
SmackDown's
just
been bad.
They're going to have time for all of these people now. It's going to be all these answers will be figured out by January, and you're going to have all these new stars because you're going to have that extra 60 minutes every week on Friday nights.
Oh, yeah. SmackDown's just been – that is, to me, not debatable. I totally agree that SmackDown has kind of fallen off a cliff for the most part.
Well, where was your level of Survivor Series? What was your rating out of 10 at the beginning of the show, and what is it now? Has it stayed the same?
No, it's the same. Yeah, like you mean like through talking to you, has it gone down?
I'm just curious. That's all. I feel you came into the show more high on this show.
No, I was disappointed overall. I would say by like the two war games. Again, I have a base level of enjoyment, but I recognize that these were not war games that were as great as previous.
Well, we will get the semifinals on Monday for the Last Time Is Now tournament. So this is Gunther against Solo Sikoa and LA Knight against Jey Uso. And they really didn't do anything in the war games tonight that would make you think that Jay's going to come in selling anything as a result of this war games. Like, yes, they lost, but it's not like what was the big spot he took that, Reigns speared Lesnar and him through the table, but we'll see how they handle this on Monday. I think it's going to be Gunther and Jay in the final. I think it's Gunther getting his win back from WrestleMania to go to the final with Cena. That would be my thought, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I could see either Knight or Jay winning it, but maybe to further piss off the audience, that will make it Jay.
Maybe the Masked Man gets into the tournament at the last second. Maybe there's a phantom attack on Jey Uso. LA Knight needs another mystery opponent, and it's the Mystery Man.
Yeah, very possible.
Mm-hmm. And Austin Theory goes to retire John Cena at the retirement. Maybe that's how this all comes together, Way. And that sets up our creative for 2026. The Austin era is upon us.
He's already beaten him once. Yeah.
That's it. He goes 2-0. All right, everybody, we're going to say goodnight. Thanks for all your feedback and staying up late with us for the Survivor Series recap. If you are so inclined, we are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You get our reviews of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown here on the YouTube channel, but you can go XL. We go through all of the news every single day and take your feedback and questions. It's postwrestlingcafe.com. A banger month in December, if I do say so myself. We have a pair of rewindaways. We're going back to Survivor Series 1991 this week. Hulk Hogan versus The Undertaker, and a very famous tombstone spot on that show. Later this month, we'll be reviewing the first WWE draft from March of 2002. I'm also going to be getting together with David Bixenspan for a review of Video Killed the Radio Star on Bubba the Love Sponge and the Hulk Hogan sex tape. We are
not
watching
the Buggles song and
no. We're gonna watch the principal character's bungle this entire issue in the early 2010s. So that will be reviewed by David Bixenspan and myself. Plus, this month, reviews of TNA Final Resolution, the World Tag League Final, UFC 323. We've got Collision Course, XL editions of the shows. All that can be yours. $6 a month, postwrestlingcafe.com. And give Way a round of applause for these wonderful graphics he puts together. Just like a magician that show up in my inbox, always looking pristine.
Well, you're very welcome, John. Thank you. Appreciate all that. Right.
On that note, everybody, we are going to say goodbye. We'll speak with you on Monday after Raw. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.